More now from The Last Year in the Life of the Beatles, 1969. I'm Paul Ingalls with Harry Norton.
January 10th. The Beatles are back at Twickenham Film Studios for more filmed rehearsals for a TV special and live concert. The morning featured run-throughs of Get Back and Two of Us, which around this time was more of a rocker.
In the film of Let It Be, there's a famous scene in which George Harrison and Paul McCartney are rehearsing parts to a song that Paul's written, and Harrison becomes visibly impatient with Paul. He tells him, I'll play what you want, or I won't play anything at all.
I know, it's this one, it's like, should we play guitar through Hey Jude? Well, I don't think we should.
Yeah, okay, well, I don't mind. I'll play, you know, whatever you want me to play. Or I won't play at all if you don't want me to play. No, whatever it is that will please you. I'll do it.
George Harrison left the band, I believe, on January 10th. That conflict between McCartney had already happened a day or two before then. The real conflict in the band at that time was between George Harrison and John Lennon. The eruptive fight that they had, according to George Martin, actually came to blows. My best guess is that it was a conflict over the presence of Yoko Ono at the sessions. She had become inseparable from John. She contributed comments and criticism about the music, which I know irritated both George and Paul, but also she had seemed to take a place in the Beatles. And George Harrison, who had been in the back seat for so long, had to find that truly discouraging. George was already of a sort of depressive nature, and just as his songwriting was beginning to bloom, to find himself in less of a power position had to be terribly disappointing and unsettling for him. And I think that was the source of the conflict that occurred between him and John Lennon and that caused George to walk out for so long.
As for John Lennon's take, late in 1970, he talked at length with Rolling Stone magazine's Jan Wenner.
It's the same. Well, you can quote Paul, you can look it in the papers. He said many times that at first he hated Yoko and then he got to like her. It's too late for me, you know, and for Yoko, you know. Why should she take that kind of shit from those people? You know, they're writing about it looking miserable in Let It Be. You sit through 60 sessions with the most big-headed, uptight people on earth and see what it's like and be insulted by it just because you love someone. That's... And George was insulted her right to her face in Apple office at the beginning, just being straightforward. You know, that game of, well, I'm going to be up front because this is what I've heard, and Dylan and a few people said you've got a lousy name in New York and you give off bad vibes. That's what George said to her, and we both sat through it, and I didn't hit him, I don't know why. But I was always hoping that they'd come round. I couldn't believe it, you know. And they all sat there with their wives like a jury and judged us. And that's what they did to us. Ringo was all right, so was Maureen. But the other two really gave it to us. You know, I never forgive them. You know, I don't care what about Hare Krishna and God and Paul about, well, I've changed my mind. You know, I don't forgive them for that.
All together.
George Harrison had whole different ideas about what the Beatles should be by that point, and he clearly did not want to do a live show. That was one of the reasons why he pulled out, left the band for 10 days, because he was so opposed to the possibility of doing a live show that it became a daily obstruction in their rehearsals. So whatever that ideal was to perform live that had ignited them a couple of months before was extinguished by the time they gathered in early 1969 to rehearse for a live show.
Later on that January 10th, George Harrison walks out saying, "See you around the clubs." After another day or two of three Beatle rehearsals and confusion about what to do next, the Beatles shut down for a week. Coincidentally, January the 11th, Wonderwall Music, solo recordings by George Harrison for a film called Wonderwall, enters the Billboard album charts at number 197. Neither the film nor the album really went anywhere. Also, during this layoff, on July 13th, Yellow Submarine, the companion LP to the Beatles' cartoon film, is released in the US.
Sheepdog, standing in the rain. Bullfrog, doing it again. Some kind of happiness is measured out in miles. What makes you think you're something special when you smile?
On July 15th, the four Beatles meet. George agrees to rejoin the group on two conditions: that the plan for a live show to a large audience be dropped, and that the rest of the recordings be done not in the drafty Twickenham studios, but in the basement studios of the Beatles' Apple Records offices on Savile Road in central London. Filming, though, still continued. Recording resumed January the 21st. January 22nd.
Shalom.
You see.
We improve with time.
You're not talking to Ricky and the
like Rex, a fine wine, know. Really. I put us down as Beaujolais 62.
Also on the 22nd, keyboardist Billy Preston joins in on the sessions.
I'm Steve Turner, author of the Beatles book A Hard Day's Right. I'm pretty sure the Beatles met Billy Preston out in Hamburg when he was very young. And Billy Preston had a gospel music background. I mean, Billy is really the only musician to play with the Beatles and be identified and photographed with the Beatles playing on their records. I mean, Eric Clapton's contributed, and there might be one or two other people that did something very minor on a Beatles record, but he was actually like the fifth Beatle for that period of time.
And, you know, George Harrison brought Billy Preston in to play keyboards, because if they were going to be doing these songs with no overdubs, obviously they would need to have a keyboard player if they wanted any keyboards on the songs. And B, you know, I think quite skillfully, he realized that if there was somebody there playing with them who wasn't in the band, everybody in the band would behave themselves a little more.
January 23rd, more work on I've Got a Feeling and also on Get Back.
What are you trying to do here? Is that jazz, is it? Is jazz something?
It does fetch you in,
though. It's Ann Powers again from the Los Angeles Times. So when I was a baby Beatles fan and I guess a baby music critic, I've Got a Feeling was one of the first songs I ever kind of psychoanalyzed. Any Beatles fan wonders why the Beatles broke up. Part of the Beatles mythology is that John and Paul just couldn't resolve their artistic tensions, which I think was true in a lot of ways. To me, I've Got a Feeling pits Paul's strengths against John's strengths, especially at that period, in an interesting way. You have the part that Paul sings that's all about feeling, that's kind of soulful, that seems modeled after maybe like an Otis Redding song, or, you know, has that influence, which was, I think, very big for Paul on this record of gospel-y soul music.
This is musician and Beatle fan David Gans.
Well, I've Got a Feeling has great guitar stuff in it.
I've got a feeling, a feeling deep inside, oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've got a feeling, a feeling I can't hide. Oh no.
Oh no.
I'd hate to miss the train.
Yes, I do.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And if you leave me, I won't be late again.
It has this bridge that is incomprehensible. I have no idea what words he's singing in there. But there's just something really, really big about that song. And then there's the fact that it's actually two songs.
I've got a feeling.
Yes, you have.
That keeps me on my toes.
On your what?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have John coming in and speaking third person, you know, everybody's had a bad day, everybody's, all these things. Almost like more like social commentary, or it's very wry. The sound of John's part is a little more psychedelic pop. And the two are sort of clashing against each other in the song. It's almost like they're having an argument.
Everybody had a hard year. Everybody had a good time. Everybody got a wet dream. Everybody saw the sunshine. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Everybody had a hard year. Everybody got the feet up.
Yeah.
Everybody let the hair down. Everybody put the socks up. Oh yeah.
Emotion, you know, or head trips. For me, as a baby Beatles fan, that was what was happening in the band.
I cocked it up trying to get loud.
Yeah.
Like, Paul was making this feelingful music. John thought it was sentimental. John was making this experimental, politically driven music that maybe Paul thought was a bit too way out. Of course, it's not that simple, but you can certainly tell that story in that song.
Alexander the Great was a big head. Or a fireplace. I didn't know that.
Good night, Dick.
Good night, Dick.
Now, all right, we can't carry on like this indefinitely.
We seem to,
but we can't.
January the 24th. Among the tracks worked out on this day, two of us, a snippet called Maggie May, and a Paul McCartney song that would wind up on his first solo album a year later, Teddy Boy.
This is the story of a boy named Ted. If his mother said Ted, be good.
All right.
She told him tales about his soldier dad, but it made her sad, and she cried, oh my. Ted used to tell her he'd be twice as good, and he knew he could, 'cause in his head, he said, Mama, don't worry, no children. Taking good care of you. I'm at home for a good Teddy boy. Daddy's gonna see you through. And she said, Teddy, don't worry, your mommy is here. Taking good care of you. She said, Teddy, don't worry, mommy is here. Teddy's gonna see you through. He said, they have taken her away, and she never walked down my street anymore. Oh, the judge, she guilty found her, but I'm in a home and bound her. That day she don't feel no good, Maggie May.
Take it, Maggie. Oh, fancy me chances with you.
I fancy me chances with you. I fancy me chances with you. Fancy me chances, oh, fancy me chances with you.
Fancy me chances at the lock. Fancy me chances with your frock. Fancy me chances. Fancy me chances. Fancy me chances with you.
Oh, fancy me chances with you.
Fancy me chances with you.
Fancy
Yes. Okay. What is there?
Don't know. You'll hear it. Yeah. Just the first occasion you get.
I did with my thumb. Yeah.
This is Sean Colvin, and I'm talking to you from my home in Austin, Texas. Two of Us, one of my favorites. It's nostalgic and dear. It could be about Paul and John. It could be about, you know, John and Yoko. It's could it be about, you like to think it's about Paul and John. There's something lovely about that. But it's just so sweet.
When I first heard Two of Us, I thought, oh, that's about John and Paul, because he talks about lifting latches and lighting matches, and it just sounded like a sort of boyhood in Liverpool. And the style of the song, of course, is very, you could almost imagine it in the Hard Day's Night era. It sounds like the early era Beatles, and that again sort of made me think it must be about John and Paul. But Linda gave me the background on this. When they met, when they were in London, Linda was very carefree, and she would say to Paul, hey, let's drive out into the country and get lost. And Paul would say, well, how can you get lost? And she said, well, I'll show you. And so they'd drive out into the country, and then they deliberately lose themselves. And Paul had such great fun doing this. You know, he felt sort of free, liberated from, you know, being in Abbey Road, being in hotel rooms, being on planes or whatever. And that's what Two of Us is all about. We're going home. You and I have memories longer than the road that stretches ahead. Two of us wearing raincoats, standing so low.
January the 25th, the Beatles get close to their final versions of Let It Be and George Harrison's For You Blue.
Because you're sweet and lovely, girl, I love you. Because you're sweet and lovely, girl, I do. I love you more than ever, girl, it's true.
Thank you. Genesis Beatle author Richie Unterberger in San Francisco. I think that Let It Be, it's a real highlight of their final year of recording. Paul McCartney sometimes gets slagged as being a little bit of a superficial songwriter, especially compared to John Lennon. But I think this is a really fine example of the peaks he could hit as a lyricist, because it almost has a gospel feel, but it's more universal than a lot of gospel songs to my ears, because it's not tied to a specific religion. It has a message of reassurance and hope that strikes a chord with anybody. I mean, you might actually hear it played at religious services of several faiths, because it almost has that liturgical feel. It emerged from a dream in which he had about his mother, but it, unlike some of his solo work, does not succumb to over-sentimentality.
I think that was rather grand. I'd take one home with me. Okay, let's track it. You bounder, you cheat!
The Beatles wrap up their January recordings with the rooftop concert and final versions of some classics. More of the last year in the life of the Beatles, 1969, after a break.
Because I know you love me so. It's just we never did that very good, but I mean it's... Yeah. Because I know you love me so. But we always just... Because I know I love you so. Wake up in the morning, I don't feel blue. All day and night, get the funny feeling. You don't treat me right. Should've read your letter, and then I know I would've felt much better. Because I know you love me so.